For many years, critics refused to believe that the sexuality of America's foremost poet could be homo, though the evidence pours out of the poems to us.
For the one I love most lay sleeping by me, under the same cover in the cool night. In the stillness, in the autumn moonbeams, his face was inclined toward me, and his arm lay lightly around my breast, and that night I was happy.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A rare coming-out story enlivens Japanese politics, the law attacks queer leaders in Poland and Uganda, and singing and celebrating the good gay life of America's good gray poet. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 13, 2005. In a rare move for a Japanese elected official, a member of Osaka's prefectural assembly publicly identified herself as a lesbian this week. Three factors contributed to the timing of Kanako Asuji's announcement. She's halfway through her four-year term. Tokyo Lesbigays are celebrating Pride this weekend, and her autobiography is about to be published. That book's entitled Coming Out, A Journey for Finding Your True Self. Although Otsuji had not revealed her orientation during her election campaign, she ran for office in part because she hoped to do something about anti-gay prejudice and discrimination. She told reporters, "Homosexual people have often kept silent for fear of discrimination and prejudice. I don't want children troubled by being homosexual to experience the same hardships I did. I believe that coming out as a homosexual is the best thing I can do to encourage numerous people." Otsuji is a political independent but belongs to a group of independents in the assembly known as Shuken Osaka.
For a member of South Australia's state parliament and former state cabinet member who has actively supported equality legislation, revelation this week of a gay affair of his own ended a 16-year political career. Mark Brindle intends to serve out the final 6 months of his current term as member for Unley, but dropped plans to run as the Liberal Party's candidate to represent Adelaide. Brindle's three-month affair with a much younger man was scandalous for at least three reasons. He's married to a woman with four now adult children. The sex took place in his electorate office on three occasions. And the young man is mentally disabled enough that he's supported by the state and legally under the protection of the guardianship board, although Brindle insists he was capable of consent. Brindle is charged that the young man's former foster father attempted to extort money from him in exchange for keeping the affair secret, an allegation the police have been investigating. That investigation more or less forced Brindle to publicly identify himself as a bisexual. And although he admits to bad judgment and deep remorse for the pain he's caused his family and others, he seems to denounce the pressure to remain closeted rather than his orientation itself.
Brindle had sponsored a bill for legal recognition of gay and lesbian couples in South Australia, but activists throughout Australia demonstrated this week for full marriage equality. A National Day of Action was held on the first anniversary of the enactment of an amendment to the Federal Marriage Act, which specifically restricted marriage to one man and one woman. Rallies were staged in Brisbane, Hobart, Melbourne, Perth, and Sydney. The Sydney rally in Hyde Park drew a crowd of more than 1,000, and 600 marched to it en masse. Another Sydney action was planting a mass of pink hearts in Victoria Park. About 400 people gathered for a rally at Melbourne's town hall. Many of them wore heart-shaped rainbow stickers and waved heart-shaped flags, while some ceremonially exchanged vows. Non-legal weddings were also held at the other three rallies, with more than 100 in the crowd in Hobart.
Sometimes being a high-profile activist can be costly. Last week, the president of the Polish group Campaign Against Homophobia, Robert Biedron, was fined the equivalent of $180 US plus court costs by a district court in what he says was an unusually speedy closed session in which he had no chance to defend himself. The penalty was for insulting Roman Catholics. When he responded at a public forum to an anti-gay activist's comments saying they mirror in full the fascist nationalistic Catholic character of the witch hunt against homosexuals. What Polish Family Association spokesperson Dorota Eckes had said, as reported in the Nationalistic newspaper, was, "Homosexuality is an inversion of ideas and a threat to a healthy family. If somebody bears this illness, they should be aware in advance that they will be forbidden to perform certain activities, which particularly concerns a function of a teacher who educates our children and shapes their consciences and, in a sense, also their social ideas." Bidron is appealing the judgment.
Much scarier was a late July national police raid in Uganda on the home of the leader of the nation's only lesbian, gay, and trans advocacy group, Sexual Minorities Uganda. Victor Juliet Mukasa wasn't in her Kampala home at the time, but police arbitrarily arrested a visiting Kenyan activist who was. The Kenyan was later released, but only after being subjected to what human rights watchdog Amnesty International describes as humiliating and degrading treatment, including being forced to strip naked to prove to police that she is female. Without showing a warrant on request, the police confiscated everything that appeared to have any homosexual content and appeared to be looking for something that might be used as incriminating evidence. Amnesty International announced that it's concerned about the ongoing intimidation of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender rights activists in Uganda, and a persistent climate of hostility and prejudice against members of the LGBT community there, in a statement that reminded the nation's government of its international human rights treaty agreements.
Amnesty supporters were ubiquitous at this week's 15th annual Pride Parade through Belfast in Northern Ireland. There were a record 4,500 marchers in what organizers and national police agreed was the most successful Pride Parade there yet. But the coalition of Christian protesters who failed in their bid to get the National Parades Commission to stop the parade from taking place at all were still complaining afterwards. They said some marchers had violated commission guidelines by shouting abusive remarks at their counter-demonstration, including calling them bigots and religious fundamentalist murderers, and they'll use that in their efforts to block next year's parade. Most reports indicate that whatever those counter-demonstrators tried to say to the marchers was drowned out by crowd applause. But the Christian group had also hired an advertising truck they displayed outside major gay venues, intending, as they said, to assist in conveying God's message of repentance to Belfast's sodomite community.
Stockholm, Sweden's 8th annual Pride Parade this week was a trouble-free affair with a party atmosphere, enjoyed by a reported 5,300 marchers.
Still farther north in Iceland, Reykjavik's Pride Parade and festival this week drew a crowd of 40 to 50,000. The lead speaker at the rally was the government's Minister for Social Affairs, Arne Magnusson, who declared his support for marriage equality and adoption rights for gays and lesbians and for equal access to fertility treatments for lesbians.
Vancouver, Canada's big Pride Parade the previous weekend featured a South Asian lesbian-gay group for the first time. Tricon represented its emphasis on culture, with a float depicting Bollywood and playing music from its Indian films, while the contingent wore more traditional saris and Punjabi suits.
That same day, a crowd of about 144,000 turned out to watch the 31st Pride Parade in San Diego, California. But while quite a few politicians were on hand, Chula Vista Mayor Steve Padilla stole the show when he used the occasion to publicly identify himself as a gay man. Although he hasn't hidden anything for more than 5 years and introduced his partner as such at some events for 3, Pride seemed the time to lay any remaining questions to rest. He's confident this won't affect his chances for re-election next year. Although Chula Vista is thought of as a suburb of San Diego, Padilla's coming out actually makes it the second largest city in the U.S. to have an openly gay or lesbian mayor, second only to San Diego itself.
Since Hillsborough County, Florida's commissioners notoriously passed a resolution stopping any recognition of lesbian-gay pride by any county government facility, gay-friendly Key West felt moved to offer the Hillsborough community an alternative. By proclamation of the Key West City Commission and the Monroe County Commission, this weekend has been declared Hillsborough County Pride in Exile Days.
The 5 million member Evangelical Lutheran Church in America this week rejected moves to establish ceremonies for same-gender couples and to allow partnered gays and lesbians to serve as clergy. The denomination's National Assembly held a vote to maintain unity despite their divisions on lesbi-gay issues, affirming unity by an almost 8-to-1 margin. But the move to allow non-celibate gays and lesbians to serve as ministers divided the more than 1,000 delegates almost evenly, while a 2/3 majority was needed for the policy to change. The position adopted by the Assembly on the ceremonies for same-gender couples is viewed as ambiguous, for while it affirms the current ban, it also appears to allow individual ministers and congregations to act as they see fit in their efforts to provide pastoral care to all.
And finally, in the U.S. married state of Massachusetts, the swans, whose summer in Boston's public garden have been a popular and celebrated attraction for 16 years. The romance was heightened last year when a clutch of eggs was produced by a pair of swans who soon became known as Romeo and Juliet. But despite the couple's parental behavior and supportive efforts by park rangers, the public garden did not get its first ever hatchling. When the last of the eggs was tested and found infertile, the Franklin Park Zoo's apiculturist performed a detailed examination of the birds. That established with certainty what their breeder had told park officials when they first acquired the pair a few years ago, but had never been made public until now. The correct answer to the question asked by so many children, which one is Romeo, is neither. Both swans are female. Marty Rouse of the lesbian gay group Mass Equality told the Boston Globe, "We should still cherish and love our swans, no matter whom they choose to swim with."
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 13th, 2005. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
This Way Out listener Dr. Robert Simmons, Jr. of Dayton, Ohio, in honor of his mother, Mabel Simmons, has issued a donor matching challenge to supporters of this program. Please check out the new information on our website, www.thiswayout.org, to see how your help to keep This Way Out on the air will mean twice as much to us. Thank you.
Marty Adams, singer-songwriter. I want to say thanks for This Way Out. This magazine didn't exist in 1984 when I came off the road, and it's a thrill now that I'm back performing again to know that this show exists and is broadcasting lesbian and gay music and culture all over the world.
For most of the 20th century, U.S. scholars resisted the suggestion that Walt Whitman, America's preeminent good gray poet, was also its good gay poet. He was, at one time or another, also an essayist, printer, teacher, editor, political writer, and journalist. Whitman lived during one of America's most turbulent centuries, the 19th, scarred by the bloody Civil War, but his lyrical Leaves of Grass, for which he's best known, is timeless. He was urged to leave out its erotic poems, but Whitman refused, claiming they were fundamental to his overall purpose. In Singing and Celebrating, This Way Out correspondent Hugh Young, aided by the descriptive words of Oscar Wilde, among others, examines the considerable evidence that Walt Whitman would today identify as a proudly gay man.
I hear the trained soprano. She convulses me like the climax of my love grip. But for the opera, I could never have written Leaves of Grass.
Yes, Walt Whitman was an opera queen, but so much more. He saw himself
And amazingly, his poetry makes the claim convincing as a kind of universal person. What the critics call him is transcendentalist.
What I assume, you shall assume. For every atom belonging to me, as good belongs to you.
His universality inevitably includes the sexual.
You give me the pleasure of your eyes, face, flesh, as we pass. You take of my beard, breast, hands, in return.
And this universality meshes neatly with the healthy nationalism that has made him the US's greatest poet. In fact, he came at the right time, spanning the Civil War, to define the United States for its citizens. Whitman was born the second of nine children on Long Island, which he preferred to call by its original name, Palmanock. He had only 5 years at school, but as an apprentice office boy, a kindly lawyer gave him a subscription to a lending library. He switched to printing, then teaching, and he may have lost one job for undue familiarity with a male pupil. He tried journalism, wrote some reviews of opera, and became besotted by it, sometimes going to every performance for weeks on end. In 1854 and 55, aged about 35, in a flurry of inspiration, he wrote the first edition of Leaves of Grass. He continued to revise and expand it for the rest of his life, most notably adding drum taps after the Civil War.
Many a soldier's loving arms about this neck have crossed and rested. Many a soldier's kiss dwells on these bearded lips.
And When Lilacs Last in the Dooryard Bloomed, after the death of Lincoln. It was in 1860 that he added the section that most interests us, called calamus. Calamus is the name of a number of plants, palms, reeds, and grasses, but Whitman means the sweet flag, Acarus calamus, which has a phallic stalk growing out and up from its stem.
If I worship any particular thing, it shall be some of the spread of my body. Root of washed sweet flag, timorous pond snipe nest of duplicate eggs, it shall be you. Mixed tousled hay of head and beard and brawn, it shall be you. Trickling sap of maple, fiber of manly wheat, it shall be you. Calamus, sweet green bulb, and melons, with bulbs grateful to the hand. Trickling sap flows from the end of the manly maple tooth of delight. Living bulbs, melons with polished rinds, that smooth to the reached hand. Bulbs of life lilies, polished melons, flavored for the gentlest, mildest hand that shall reach.
And he is more explicit than this.
For the one I love most lay sleeping by me, under the same cover in the cool night. In the stillness, in the autumn moonbeams, his face was inclined toward me, and his arm lay lightly around my breast, and that night I was happy.
Before we jump to conclusions, we need to remember that there was no such word as homosexuality for 14 years after Leaves of Grass was published, only derogatory names for sexual acts, and men and boys did commonly sleep together in those days without, so far as we know, anything sexual happening. Whitman's universality almost transcends the notion of sexual orientation. One sequence, Children of Adam, enthusiastically celebrates sexuality and was widely denounced as indecent. In it, he changed the sex of some pronouns, not so much as to hide anything, it was fully revealed elsewhere, but in order to be inclusive of women. He did try to give us a name, derived from the lost pseudoscience of phrenology, and that name was adhesive, for comrades who stick together, compared to amative heterosexuals.
O adhesiveness, O pulse of my life.
For many years, critics refused to believe that the sexuality of America's foremost poet could be homo, though the evidence pours out of the poems to us.
What think you I take my pen in hand to record? Merely of two simple men I saw today on the pier, in the midst of the crowd, parting the parting of dear friends. The one to remain hung on the other's neck and passionately kissed him, while the one to depart tightly pressed the one to remain in his arms.
The gay pioneer, John Addington Symonds, tried to get a straight answer from him in his last years, but he denied it, claiming, without any evidence, that he had fathered six illegitimate children. Critics have seized on that, and even on coded references like,
always preserve a kind spirit and demeanor to 16, but pursue her no more,
as evidence that he loved women. The numbers turn out to be the numbers phrenologists gave to bumps on the head, and 16 is hope. And he sometimes wrote in a simple code.
Daily and simple exercise I am fond of, to pull on that young hickory sapling out there, to sway and yield to its tough, limber, upright stem, haply to get into my old sinews some of its elastic fiber and clear sap.
At other spots, I hold on boughs or slender trees, caressingly there in the sun and shade, wrestle with their innocent stalwartness, and know the virtue thereof passes from them into me.
There's reason to think that Hickory Sapling refers to a youth called Harry Stafford, who was a teenager when Whitman was in his late 50s. They spent several years living together on and off, even sleeping together in other people's houses, where Whitman called him his adoptive son or his nephew. And his diaries record many physical details about his many young male friends.
Tall, well tanned. A great head of brown, yellowy, shining hair, thick and longish, rough.
Often with the same happy ending.
Slept with me September 3rd. Slept with him December 4th, 62. Slept with me last night. Weather soft, cool enough, warm enough, heavenly.
But we have a more explicit record than this. The gay pioneer Edward Carpenter, the man whose partnership inspired E.M. Forster's Morris, wrote a book about his encounters with Whitman and never mentions them even spending a night together. But Gavin Arthur says Carpenter showed him what Whitman was like in bed. Arthur, by the way, was a grandson of President Chester Arthur, and he told Allen Ginsberg,
Carpenter said that Whitman regarded sex as the best way to get to know another man. I asked him how Whitman made love, and he showed me. It was a warm night, and we had just a light eiderdown over us. We were both naked and lay side by side on our backs, holding hands. Then, he was holding my head in his two hands and making little growly noises, staring at me in the moonlight. This is the laying on of hands, I thought reverently. Walt, then him, then me. He snuggled up to me and kissed my ear. His beard tickled my neck. He smelled like the leaves and ferns and soil of autumn woods. The old man at my side was stroking my body with the most expert touch, caressing the flesh with feather lightness. I just lay there in the moonlight that poured in at the windows and gave myself up to the loving old man's marvelous petting. Every now and then he would bury his face in the hair of my chest, agitate a nipple with the end of his tongue, or breathe in deeply from my armpit. His tongue was flickering all over me like summer lightning. I could feel my young vitality flowing into his old age. He was in no sense a succubus. The emphasis was on the caressing and loving. I fell asleep like a child, safe in father-mother arms, the arms of God.
One stormy night in 1865, Whitman was the only passenger in a tram car. The tram conductor, Peter Doyle, went to sit with him, and, as he put it, they felt to each other at once. Doyle put his hand on Whitman's knee, and the two men remained passionately attached until Whitman's death, even though Irish-born Doyle fought for the Confederates and Whitman was a Yankee. In 1882, Oscar Wilde took time from his lecture tour of the U.S. to visit Whitman. Wilde was 27, Whitman 63. At first they talked formally of art and poetry. Then Whitman opened a bottle of his sister-in-law's homemade elderberry wine and they got a bit more friendly. Whitman put his hand on Wilde's knee and said,
I will call you Oscar.
Maybe a hand on the knee didn't mean as much to them as it would to us. And beside, the publisher J.M. Stoddart was there. Stoddart later said the wine must have been hard to get down, but Wilde replied,
If it had been vinegar, I should have drunk it all the same, for I have an admiration for that man which I can hardly express.
He did express it later.
He is the grandest man I've ever seen, the simplest, most natural and strongest character I have ever met in my life, and I regard him as one of those wonderful, large, entire men who might have lived in any age and is not peculiar to any people. Strong, true, and perfectly sane.
Wilde visited Whitman again a few months later, alone this time. Wilde was later to tell George Ives, an early what we would call gay activist, that Whitman had made no effort to conceal his homosexuality, as he had from Simons.
The kiss of Walt Whitman,
he said,
is still on my lips.
Being such a whole human being, Whitman's life could not be uninterrupted bliss.
Hours discouraged, distracted, for the one I cannot content myself without, soon I saw him content himself without me. Sullen and suffering hours. I am shamed, but it is useless. I am what I am.
Prophetic words. The greatness of Whitman's soul was such that he could be actively homosexual, loving each man and youth totally, apparently without carrying any of the burden of guilt that weighed down his generation or the three that followed, a guilt whose legacy we are only now shaking off. He's already been called the good gay poet, but perhaps he deserves the title of the first gay man for prophecies like these.
I dreamed in a dream I saw a city invincible to the attacks of the whole of the rest of the earth. I dreamed that that was the new city of friends. Nothing was greater than the quality of robust love. It led the rest. It was seen every hour in the actions of the men of that city and in all their looks and words. When you read these, I, that was visible, am become invisible. Now it is you, compact, visible, realizing my poems, seeking me, fancying how happy you were, if I could be with you and become your lover. Be it as if I were with you. Be not too certain that I am not now with you.
You've been listening to Singing and Celebrating, produced and narrated by Hugh Young. The words of Walt Whitman were spoken by John Below, and those of Gavin Arthur by Mike Binnis. Peter Sledmere, cast against type, played the part of Oscar Wilde.
Are you signed up for our monthly emailed This Way Out updates? They briefly preview upcoming programming and give you other behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio program. We also send out weekly email messages about the specific content of each upcoming show. To receive one or both of these messages, all you need to do is email tworadio@aol.com. And be assured that we don't share, sell, or otherwise provide your email address or anything else about you to anyone, and we never will. Again, to receive the monthly This Way Out update and or our weekly program promo message, ask for them by name when you email tworadio@aol.com. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Rick Watts, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, and Hugh Young contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Don't forget, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Your help to keep this program on the air will now mean twice as much to us. You can still bid on some terrific items at an online auction sponsored by the Stonewall Society to benefit This Way Out. Look for the This Way Out area at alternabid.com. And to be sure you don't miss a week of This Way Out, you can subscribe to audio CDs of our program. For more information, please do visit thiswayout.org, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on KHEN, Salida, California, WSUI, Iowa City, Iowa, 3OCR, Colac, Victoria, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.